The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Quite a lot to get to on today's program. Lots of news that we want to move through here in the first segment. And then come back to something as I just searched through some old notes this morning. Something we've talked about on this program a time or two before, the law of history. My father's had a lot to say about that in the form of prophets and some of his other writings. And we'll talk more about that and tie it into some of the events we see happening in the United States today. The push coming from the radical left to erase some of America's history. So we'll get into that in the next segment, and then also we'll work super hard today to create some space, some time for feedback, emails that have come in response to the program, in response to the trumpet briefs that that we send out daily. Brad McDonald, by the way, sent out an excellent brief last night. Hopefully you got a chance to read that. If you don't receive the trumpet brief, a lot of this text that goes out each day to more than 18,000 subscribers, you don't see it anywhere else on the website. Now, we are working to eventually change that to where you can get to some of the archived material that's been going out each day. But he had a lot to say, Mr. McDonald did, about the eclipse on Monday, and just the fact that you can calculate that hundreds of years in advance. I mean, the fact that scientists can know exactly when it's going to hit, where it will be, how wide the line of totality will be. They know all of that based upon certain definite laws that God himself put in place. And of course, there's a lot that we can take away from that in terms of spiritual lessons as well, because there are definite spiritual laws. And as Herbert Armstrong so often said, the reason for all the troubles in our world today, it always gets back to breaking God's spiritual laws, violating the Ten Commandments. And so we're seeing it face to face now, just the rise of hatred and division and strife. So many people just discontented, unhappy, even in the rich, prosperous nations. They have so much to complain about, so many things to protest over. And here we're just, in America at least, in the UK, I mean, we're living in fabulous prosperity compared to previous centuries, for sure. And yet look at how unhappy and miserable so many people in our nations are today. If you haven't subscribed to the Trumpet Brief, you can receive a free subscription to that daily email blast at thetrumpet.com. Well, there was a piece in the Times today about the Barcelona attack from last week and how that, according to one of the individuals that was arrested, this Moroccan man, he told a judge that he and his fellow jihadists, that they were planning to murder hundreds of people at many different tourist sites around Barcelona. And this article talks about how that they had this makeshift bomb factory where they were building all of these bombs, and of course it accidentally blew up the day before. And so they had to then improvise and turn to the vehicles, and even then they ended up killing, I think, 14 people. But I mean, this is something that could have killed hundreds. This is something that could have been like the Paris-style attacks from late 2015. And for whatever reason, God prevented it from happening. Who knows what led to that explosion the night before? In any event, something that was horrific. I mean, it could have been much worse than that, many times over. Still, though, like with so many of these other attacks, It's just a preview of what's coming. It's building to that Daniel 11:40 clash. Europe, meanwhile, or at least the governments in Europe, are coming together. There may not be a lot of leadership there, as I said earlier this week, to confront the migrant crisis. But they are coming together. Carnegie Europe says the decision by the UK to withdraw from the EU has apparently produced remarkable unity among the 27 remaining EU member states. So if you know anything about this program, you know that Herbert Armstrong was talking about Britain leaving this union back in the 1950s. He said Britain would be no part of it. He reiterated that in his final book, Mystery of the Ages. And that has happened. Britain will be no part of it. Well, together with that now, you see Britain on the way out. And together with that, we see the rest in the Union coming together. Coming together. It says here, following Britain's June 2016 referendum, the EU27 embraced a united front, refusing to negotiate with the UK before London officially notified Brussels of its intention to trigger the EU's Article 50 clause. It says, since that happened in March this year, the EU27 have unanimously reaffirmed key principles of European integration. And so this article talks about how that, in the case of this development, it's helping Europe come together. There still are quite a few things, though, that many of the member states are divided over. It brings that out here, saying, yet if the Brexit vote has had an unexpected effect of drawing the EU27 closer together and dealing with the UK on most other matters, the EU is anything but united. And it talks about the division between some of the northern and southern member states, some of the wealthier states as opposed to some of the poorer states. Well, when you look at Bible prophecy, Daniel 2 in particular, it talks about this conglomerate being a mixture of iron and clay. So the kingdom, I mean, it specifically says that the kingdom's going to be divided. I mean, together, there's going to be strength. It's going to revolve around Germany's strength. But it's this divided mixture of iron and clay. They mix together, meaning that this is a short-lived empire. But while it lasts, I mean, it is going to have a show of force, for sure. Even Mr. Armstrong, years ago, talked about how short-lived this kingdom would be. This is not a 15 to 20-year empire. God gets so specific. It comes together, these 10, partly iron, partly clay, and it has a run of about 2.5 years. It says in Daniel 2, verse 43, as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay, so they will mix with one another in marriage, but they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay. So just the fact that there is this division, all of this squabbling, all of this uncertainty. I mean, we're watching from both angles. You see the UK leaving, and of course that brings the core more closely together. That's important. That's significant from a prophetic standpoint. And yet at the same time, when you see statements like I just read to you, the fact that there's still a lot of matters that they're divided over, well, that too is prophesied. And of course, the most important component of this Daniel 2 prophecy is verse 44. It says, in the days of these kings, that's talking about the kings in Europe that are emerging right now in Europe. In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. It says further that it's going to break in pieces and consume all of these other earthly kingdoms. God's kingdom is coming. It's going to be set up and established in the days of these kings, Daniel says. Well, to finish this Carnegie Europe piece, it says, in light of all of this, it is uncertain to what extent the EU's future may lie in the format of 27. It basically says that there's four or five different options here. There's four or five different roads that the EU can travel on, and one of them, according to the March 2017 white paper on the future of Europe, we've talked about this paper before, but one of the options is a two-tiered Europe, a multi-speed integration, where a core group of member states come together. And that's something that is receiving a lot of support from the larger members of the EU, those like Italy and France, Spain, and of course, Germany. The eastern countries, the poorer nations, the poorer member states, though, are against this. But you have the core, the larger member states, they're heading in this direction. And of course, the Bible prophesies of that union of 10 states. Well, that's the direction they're going in. That's what God says will happen. It's not going to be 27 or 16 or 13. It's 10 kings or groups. Somehow or another, we're going to see 10 kings or groups come together. This is stated in Daniel 2 and also in Revelation 17. A lot to watch for. It's amazing when you think about how specific God gets. He shows us what's coming, and we see it forming. That's why we've got to keep our eyes open. That's why we've got to watch and pray. We've got to watch these things. That listener that sent the email in yesterday, I read it to you, those two verses that he included, Jeremiah 5 and verse 21, where God talks about those who've gone to sleep spiritually. And they have eyes, but they don't see. And they have ears, but they don't hear. They don't know what's going on in the world. God has opened your eyes. God's opened my eyes. We can see. We can see what's coming because of Bible prophecy. What a precious insight this is for God to show us where all of this is leading. It's up to us to really appreciate it. And as I've been saying over and again at the start of this school year with the doctrines class, this is truth. Truth from God, revelation from God that we want to stand fast in, that we want to hold on to. Well, those are just a couple of the headlines regarding Europe and the push coming from radical Islam. There's a Reuters piece, by the way, that talks about the United States pushing for Iranian military sites being inspected following the disastrous nuclear deal signed by President Obama. But Reuters says here the United States wants to know if the UN atomic watchdog plans to inspect Iranian military sites to verify Tehran's compliance with the 2015 nuke deal. This is something the UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, is pushing for. It quotes her as saying there were already issues in those locations, so are they including that in what they look at to make sure that those issues no longer remain? They have the authority to look at the military sites now. They have the authority to look at any suspicious sites now. It's just, are they doing it? I mean, is there enforcement of these laws, these rules? Or are we just turning a blind eye to what's happening? Well, the article says a spokesman for the IAEA had no immediate comment. It says further in the piece, Iran's top authorities have flatly rejected giving international inspectors access to their military sites, and Iranian officials have told Reuters that any such move would trigger harsh consequences. And you know about all the rhetoric in recent weeks, that look, if you push us at all on this, we're going to resume building a bomb, and we're going to bring it forward a lot faster than it was before. That's what the King of the South, the prophesied King of the South, is saying. These two regional powers, Europe and radical Islam headed up by Iran, we see them rising and rising fast. Meanwhile, the problems that we're facing in our own nations, the United States and Britain, they continue to mount. There was a piece at MarketWatch, I think this was actually from last week, that just talked about how deeply in debt so many millennials are. They're financing anything and everything, and all of these companies are rushing to give them money, to let them borrow more money. It says here, in recent years, payment companies including PayPal, Affirm, and Bread have created installment plans for retailers that give consumers the option to finance the weirdest purchases over time. And so what are they financing? Well, just all kinds of trivial things, I guess. It says always avoid making, well, it gives some financial advice that really should be common sense. But in any event, I guess I don't need to get into all the detail here. But it talks at the end about how Americans have more than $1 trillion in outstanding revolving debt, or debt that's often categorized as credit card debt. $1 trillion. Another one here from Reuters. More recently, Americans' debt level notches a new record high. And so we're just running up the debt. Total U.S. household debt was $12.84 trillion in the 3 months of June, up $552 billion from a year ago. So when you add it all together, the credit cards, the homes, the cars, everything else, almost $13 trillion. And it's not that different here in the UK. And speaking of it, this again, I believe, was from last week. I didn't have time to get over to it, but it was from The Telegraph. I know we did that program recently on drugs and alcohol and overcoming addiction. We produced a video for it on it for the thetrumpet.com website. It also played on television over here in the UK. But right as we were in the midst of all that that material, this Telegraph piece came out saying that Britain's should stop getting so drunk during hen and stag parties. I guess that must be like bachelor parties, whatever it is. It says Britons should stop getting drunk during these parties. That's what a judge ruled after the death of a reveler killed during a bachelor party in Budapest. It says, speaking of I'll just paraphrase it. These two were so drunk, and the one that died, he's a 24-year-old, or he was, that was married, and he had little children. And he goes down for this bachelor party. They're staggering home. They get into a taxi. They have takeout food with them. They're spilling food all over the backseat of the taxi. The taxi driver kicks them out and says, "You guys walk. I don't want you in my car." And then they proceed to walk back to the hotel, both of them dead drunk. And they cross a busy street. The first one does, gets over to the other side, and then the second one starts walking, and he gets plowed by a car and dies immediately. And the friend that was on ahead of him didn't even realize it. He went back to the hotel room, and his wife, trying to find out what happened to the one who died, is calling the Budapest authorities and then comes to find out 2-3 days later what happened. This young father of 2-3 people. And so the judge, going through all of this, the judge, I guess, here in the UK says, you know, we need to stop drinking and getting so drunk that these kinds of tragedies happen. Like I said, when going through that material, so much of our sickness in Ephraim, in Manasseh, so much of it is self-inflicted. I mean, we bring it on ourselves. If you haven't seen that program, well, there's a podcast, of course, the radio show from a couple weeks ago, and then the program is up there in the TV box on thetrumpet.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
An excellent piece at Bloomberg yesterday. We live in fear of the online mobs. It tells the story. Well, it was just in the news, I guess, a week or two ago of James Damore. He's the one that sent out that Google memo that talked about, maybe there weren't as many women at Google because they're less interested in sitting around and staring at code all day. He made the mistake of sending a memo out like that. And of course, once social media got its hands on it, then it made the rounds. He got his 15 minutes of fame, or infamy, I guess, depending on how you look at it. And as it says here, in 6 months, few of us will be able to remember his name, but Google will remember, not the company, but the search engine. He got fired from Google, by the way. And it says here, for the rest of his life, every time he meets someone new or applies for a job, the first thing they will learn about him, and probably the only thing, is that he wrote a document that caused an internet uproar. And so this article goes on to talk about just how terrified many people are that if they say one, or they make one misstep or say one wrong thing, I mean, once it's on the internet, it doesn't go away. It won't go away. It says here, the internet did not invent the public relations disaster or the summary firing to make said disaster go away. What the internet changed is the scale of the disasters and the number of people who are vulnerable to them and the cold, implacable permanence of the wreckage that they leave behind. I mean, once it's there, it never goes away. And it talks about how that this, I mean, it gathered steam, this kind of mass or mob rule, online mobs, even before the internet took off, just cable news back in the 1990s, 24-hour news networks that would pick up a story like the one with Monica Lewinsky in 1998 and then not let it go. But the internet has taken this to another level, for sure. This article concludes here. I find myself, the author says, in more and more conversations that sound as if I were living in one of the later stage communist regimes. Not the ones that shot people, but the ones that discovered you didn't need to shoot dissidents as long as you could make them pariahs. No job, no apartment, no one willing to be seen talking to them in public. It says here, the people I have these conversations with are terrified that something they say will inadvertently offend the self-appointed powers that be. See, who are these powers that be? Who's the one decides? Who's the one who decides that this is a hate group and this isn't? It says they're afraid that their email will be hacked and stray snippets will make them the next one in the internet stocks. They're worried that some opinion they hold will unexpectedly be declared anathema in the future, forcing them to issue a humiliating public recantation or risk losing their friends and their livelihood. It says, finally, social media mobs are not, of course, as pervasive and terrifying as the Communist Party spies, but the Soviet Union is no more, and the mobs are very much with us. So it's their power that we need to think about. And that power, as we've seen, is growing. Look at how quickly a mob or a riot. I played that clip for you the other day about the Antifa movement. That five-minute piece produced by CNN where it had a police officer from, I believe it was Portland, who was talking about how much more violent these movements are and just how fast they develop. How fast they can turn up on the streets. We're seeing that play out over and again. Where does this lead? That's what the article asks, that Bloomberg piece. Where is this leading? Well, of course, it's leading to Judges 21 and verse 25. It's leading to anarchy. It's leading to mob rule. Victor Davis Hanson, in talking about this push, this movement to remove statues all across the United States, he brings up some important points in his latest, Our War Against Memory. These people pushing for this statue or that statue to be removed. I mean, how much do they really know? Do they even know about history? I'll come to that in just a second, but this discussion. This was, I think, on Fox News yesterday between one of the hosts there and Alan Dershowitz. He's the famous liberal attorney who still has some sense when it comes to this sort of violence that we're seeing on the streets from both sides. And then this more recent craziness to just remove all of these statues that are up for debate. This is the exchange between the journalist and then Professor Dershowitz, clip two.
Professor, I cannot believe what I'm saying here. This pressure on Mattis to rename military bases because they're named after Confederate leaders. In Baltimore last night, Christopher Columbus Monument was vandalized. At Columbus Circle here in New York City, they're debating on whether to take that statue down that was put up in 1890. University of Texas removes Confederate statues. Duke in North Carolina could be next. I can't go through all of this. Is there a danger in this?
Oh, of course there's a danger of going too far. There's a danger of removing, you know, Washington and Jefferson and other of our founding fathers who themselves own slaves. Look, we have to use this as an educational moment. We have to take some of the statues that were put up more recently, for example, during the civil rights movement, and perhaps move them to museums where they can be used to teach young students about how statues are intended sometimes for bad purposes, to glorify negatives and to hold back positive developments. But the idea of willy-nilly going through and doing what Stalin did, just erasing history and rewriting it to serve current purposes, does pose a danger. And it poses a danger of educational malpractice, of missing opportunities to educate people, and of going too far.
That's Alan Dershowitz on Fox News yesterday, this idea of willy-nilly going through and doing what Stalin did, just erasing history and then rewriting it. That's really what's going on here. And in Victor Davis Hanson's piece, Our War Against Memory, he says here, abolition of memory is easy when the revisionists enjoy the high moral ground and the damned are evil incarnate. But more often, killing the dead is not an easy matter of dragon slaying, as with Hitler or Stalin. Confederate General Joe Johnston was not General Stonewall Jackson, and after the war, General John Mosby was not General Wade Hampton, just as Ludwig Beck was not Joachim Piper. He's throwing a lot of names at us there, but basically he's saying, look, how do you decide? And some of the, he uses the example of General James Longstreet and how conflicted he was and some of the good things that he did and some of the bad things. That's pretty much true with just about every historical figure. And Davis Hanson says here, were the 60 to 70% of the Confederate population in most secessionist states who did not own slaves complicit in the economics of slavery? I mean, because they lived in the South, those that weren't slave owners, are they guilty too? Did they have good options to leave their ancestral homes when the war started to escape the stain of perpetuating slavery? Do such questions even matter to the new arbiters of ethics who recently defiled the so-called peace monuments in an Atlanta park? A depiction of a fallen Confederate everyman, his trigger hand stilled by an angel. Victor Davis Hanson says here, how did those obsessed with the past know so little of its history? I mean, these are the ones that are obsessed with the past, and yet they know virtually nothing about history. They don't know very much about the Civil War. They don't know very much about these generals that they want to remove. And of course, he, like you just heard in that soundbite, he asks about where this is leading. What's the logical trajectory here? Where are we headed with this kind of thinking? Well, in fact, like I said the other day, it leads right to the Constitution of the United States. And before that, it certainly leads right to the doorstep of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson. But he says here, just as in Roman times, chipping away the face of Nero did not ensure a new emperor's good behavior, so tearing down a statue of a Confederate soldier is not going to restore vitality to the inner city. He says, when Minnesota Black Lives Matter marchers chanted of police, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, was that a call for violence that was not long after realized by the spate of racist murders of policemen in Dallas? Are such advocates of torching police officers morally equipped to adjudicate which Confederate statue must come down? Really? We're going to turn to Antifa and Black Lives Matter to decide which statue or not should come down? Is that where we are in the United States? Well, he points out the gross hypocrisy here. And with all that happened, the violence that happened during the previous administration, the radical Islamist violence, the violence aimed at police officers. And then Victor Davis Hanson says here, we are in an age of melodrama, not tragedy, in which we who are living in a leisured and affluent age, in part due to the accumulated learning and moral wisdom gained and handed down by former generations of the poor and less aware, we pass judgment on prior ages because they lacked our own enlightened and sophisticated views of humanity. As if we lucky few were born fully ethically developed from the head of Zeus. As if we were born God. As if we are God. Some insightful commentary there. And here we're looking to take down all these statues, even as the same voices that are crying for this to be done are out on the streets, smashing windows, burning down business establishments, hurling objects at police officers. And in some few cases, at least so far, aiming to kill the opposition, to punch the opposition. Carrying on in this exchange between Alan Dershowitz and the Fox News reporter, this is clip 3.
Is there also a danger of trying to put today's values on yesterday's generations? I mean, for example, Woodrow Wilson, they say, well, he was a segregationist, but he did this in Princeton. We'll take it down. 200 plus years ago, I think 12 of our first 15 presidents had slaves. I think we can go back and forth. You can look at what General Lee did. There was a time in which General Lee was being urged by his officers, make this a guerrilla war. We lost, but we don't have to quit. And he said, no, we got to bring the country back together on Lincoln's behest. And he kept the country back together like no other country has ever done after Civil War. Mm-hmm. We didn't erase their legacy. Why are we running to erase it now?
Well, not only that, but I think the implications are it's only that legacy that is of concern. Remember that President Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, put 110,000 Japanese Americans into detention centers. That President Lowell of Harvard imposed anti-Jewish quotas. That discrimination against women was rampant. Once you start rewriting history of African Americans in this country, you have to start rewriting history of discrimination against many, many other groups. Look, we're both a nation of immigrants and a nation of discrimination against immigrants. That's an important history for us to remember. And the other important thing is, do not glorify the violent people who are now tearing down the statues. These, many of these people, not all of them, many of these people are trying to tear down America. Antifa is a radical, anti-American, anti-free market, communist, socialist, hard left, censorial organization that tries to stop speakers on campuses from speaking. They use violence, and just because they're opposed to fascism and to some of these monuments shouldn't make them heroes of the liberals.
That's Alan Dershowitz, a self-proclaimed liberal, one of the few who's out there denouncing Antifa as a radical anti-American, a communist, hard left, censorial organization. Those are the ones that we now listen to on what history needs to be erased or rewritten. Victor Davis Hanson says, be careful. Be careful, 21st century man. Far more hypercritical generations to come may find our own present moral certitude. Late-term and genetically driven abortion, the rise of artificial intelligence in place of human decision-making, the harvesting and selling of aborted fetal organs, ethnic and tribal chauvinism, euthanasia, racially segregated dorms and safe spaces, they may see it as immoral as we find the sins of our own predecessors. Be careful. Yes, be careful, 21st century man. It says, for the last decade, we were lectured that the arc of history always bends toward our own perceptions of moral justice. More likely, human advancement tends to be circular and should not be confused with technological progress. I mean, that's a pretty scholarly way of saying we're not getting better, we're getting worse. And we shouldn't confuse technological progress with moral advancement. It's exactly what Herbert Armstrong said over and again throughout his ministry. Here you have all of this modern advancement, these mind-dazzling gadgets and advancements in technology, but there is no corresponding advancement in morality, in character, in love toward God and fellow man. Just the opposite. Hanson says, just as often, history is ethically circular. No Roman province produced anyone quite like a modern Hitler. Attila's body count could not match Stalin's. I mean, some of the worst tyrants in history. You don't have to go back but 3-4 generations. And you're there. Forget about the Dark Ages. Forget about the early days of the Roman Empire. He says here, in the classical Athens of 420 BC, a far greater percentage of the population could read than in Ottoman Athens in AD 1600. He says the average undergraduate of 1950 probably left college knowing more than his 2017 counterpart does. See, these young people taking to the streets, these graduates of 2017, some of them, do they really know more than their counterparts from 1950 or 1900? He concludes here, a final paradox about killing the dead. Two millennia after Roman autocrats' destruction of statues and armed with the creepy 20th century model of fascists and communists destroying the past, we of a supposedly enlightened democracy cannot even rewrite history by democratic means. Local, state, and federal commission recommendations, referenda, or majority votes of elected representatives. More often, as moral cowards, we either rely on the mob or some sort of executive order enforced only in the dead of night. I mean, supposing there was majority opinion to go ahead and remove the monuments. Okay, it's a democracy, supposedly. Subject it to a vote, see what the people want. But that's not the way that it's done. It's done by the mob. It's mobocracy. That's what it's leading to. And there's a dangerous ignorance of history, as Victor Davis Hanson brings out, a dangerous, dangerous ignorance. And that's why we keep coming back to, on occasion, this law of history. That's how my father sets up his booklet, The Former Prophets. And we've referred to another piece from February 2008, The Trumpet Magazine, A Law of History, where he points out that, look, this is just something that we're human beings tend to be weak at because we're just lost in the present. But God says we need to understand the past and also envision the future. Envision the civilization that God is about to build. But look at the history. Look at the history of human civilization, of man's civilization, under the sway and influence of the devil. If you don't learn from that history, you're going to repeat it, as the saying so often goes. Listen to what my father said. I think this is from a 2009 Key of David program. Where he talked about this law of history, clip one.
Now, we have a booklet on the former prophets that tells you about the law of history. A whole chapter teaches you about the law of history. We need to know the past if we're going to know the future. But most important of all, we need to know what God has to say about it. But did you know that many of our universities don't even teach one course in history? And did you know that most of those students and most of those teachers are blind to the future? It's just the way it is. That's a law of history. And this booklet will show you that.
That's just the way it is, he says. That's the law. Blind to the future. We have no idea. No idea where this is leading. Be careful. Be careful, 21st century man. That's how Victor Davis Hanson puts it. You better know your history before you go about trying to erase it and rewrite it. Be careful. In doctrines class here in recent days, we went through this handout from The Plain Truth, February 1978. And it's Herbert Armstrong writing about the foundation and about the history of the Worldwide Church of God. And how that Mr. Armstrong, how he came upon these true teachings, these doctrines of God, and the authority behind them. And this is a 17-page, at least in the format we printed it out on, a 17-page document where he's trying to help the readers. And he says to them, look, the church is old enough now. We're heading into the second and even the third generation. And it's so important, it's crucial for you to know your history, to know our history, to know where these Bible teachings come from, to know where we receive true doctrine. He goes all the way back to Lucifer, the rebellion of that great archangel and the destruction that it brought upon the universe and the creation of mankind there in the early chapters of the book of Genesis, and how that God revealed the true gospel to Adam and Eve, but that they rejected that truth. And so God closed off the tree of life from mankind. Listen to how Mr. Armstrong describes this history. You don't read about this anywhere else except in his writings, Mystery of the Ages and some of the other things that he wrote later, but here it is in a 1978 article. And Mr. Armstrong says, instead of trying to save this sinning world, God sentenced it to sowing its own ways and reaping what it sows, to prove once and for all that only God's way of love is good for us. He sentenced this world to prove once and for all that only God's way will work. He says, look at the result today. Soon, if God does not step in and intervene and take over the rule, man will destroy himself. That's where we're headed. I mean, this is it's circular, as Victor Davis Hanson said. And the only problem is, or the only thing that's going to make it so much worse this time, as we circle back to some of the worst behavior in history, is that now you have nuclear weapons all over the earth. Matthew 24, 21, and 22. It says here, when Satan got to Eve in the Garden of Eden, he did not say, reject God's government and come under my government. No, he was too subtle for that. He said, in effect, God lied to you. You won't surely die if you take to yourself the production of knowledge of what is good and what is evil. Rule your own life. God knows that when you eat this forbidden fruit, then your eyes shall be opened and you shall be as gods, or you shall be God. That's the meaning there in Genesis 3. And Mr. Armstrong says here, notice that God did not sentence mankind to 6,000 years of Satan's rule. God allowed man to be deceived by Satan. God allowed man to think he was forming his own governments, his own religions, producing his own knowledge and education. But God knew how Satan would deceive all mankind. That's Revelation 12:9. Blinding man's eyes from the truth and swaying him by broadcasting attitudes through the air. He says, conditions in the world with man ruling himself, unknowingly swayed by Satan, have grown worse and worse. That's right out of the Bible. As I said, you're not going to read that anywhere else except in Herbert Armstrong's writings. But the Bible backs it up. Read 2 Timothy 3 sometime. Conditions are getting worse and worse. It's building toward that Matthew 24, 21, and 22 prophecy. And then after that, that prophecy we read in the first segment, Daniel 2 and verse 44, when the nations of this world, or the kingdoms of this world, become the kingdom of God. Well, that's how it's said more precisely, I guess, in Revelation 11, 15, but you can put that together with Daniel 2 and verse 44. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll race through as many emails as we can. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
This first email here comes all the way from Trinidad. I must compliment you, it says, and all whom work so hard to give such compelling truth. I enjoy reading the Trumpet Brief and the Key of David program. At present, I'm also studying the Bible Correspondence course. And then he mentions how the Key of David TV program is his favorite. All the above mentioned have changed my life drastically because looking at world events and even what's happening on the little island that I live on, I know without a doubt your church is the only true church. It's what gives me hope and courage to understand that God's great master plan is being worked out right in front of our eyes. That from Trinidad. Another one here in response to that brief last Friday, I believe, the earth is filled with violence. This is one of the few that we got in response to that brief that was somewhat negative, but there might be a positive outcome. We'll see. It says here, after several years of reading your website and newsletter, I've reluctantly unsubscribed. Instead of an unbiased interpretation of the signs of Christ's second coming, it feels that the newsletter has turned into a personal political right view and focuses more on that than what it should. It says further that it should be God's message and so on. He does say at the end, though, best of wishes, however, in your endeavor and work. So I wrote back to him over the weekend and I said, look, I mean, we have had some strong things to say about the radical left prophecies that go all the way back to the 1950s, or at least statements based on prophecy coming from Herbert Armstrong, and then again my father in America Under Attack and Great Again. But as I told him, President Trump is not going to save the United States. The Republicans are not the solution to all of these problems that we're facing. And I said, speaking of prophecy, I mean, so much of it's being fulfilled. I said, I hope that you will reconsider your decision and that you'll stay grounded in the prophecies of God, the truth of God. Well, that's a paraphrase. That's not an exact quote of what I said to him. But he did write back and said thanks for the response and that he would give it more thought. He says, I appreciate you saying the current president will not save America. It says, I think it is funny when I hear Christians debating and arguing amongst themselves like a party or Senate, Congress, or a different president can fix America's or the world's problems. It should be pretty obvious to all Christians that no matter who is in charge at the time, things are happening just as they are supposed to, and no person can fix things. At the end of days, perhaps some politicians can sow more chaos and speed things up, which isn't necessarily all bad, but no politician on either side can stop what is prophesied or the difficult times to come. Thanks again for the response. So he did say he would reconsider, and hopefully we'll retain him as a subscriber to our daily emails. The Trumpet Brief. Another one here says, thank you so much for keeping God's people grounded. The Trumpet has taught so many, so much. You and all the staff must be commended and appreciated by so many subscribers. Another one here says this, referring to, I think this was Brad McDonald's Trumpet Brief last week about North Korea, doomsday postponed but not canceled. This reader says, this along with today's Trumpet Daily were excellent. A lot of people who are caught up in these groups don't understand any way of thinking outside of the one in their own life community. This type of write-up is probably more than a lot of them could initially understand. One word that I think people can understand is toxic. To describe a social group or network as toxic, on a totally unrelated point, I have to smile at President Trump addressing the reporters as fake news. He's right. The Trumpet is the real free press. Nice little plug for thetrumpet.com, the Trumpet magazine. Another one here from New Zealand says, I just wanted to make some time to express my gratitude unto yourself and the team for all these wondrous messages that you're blessing us with the radio program, the trumpet.com, these magnificent trumpet briefs. It says, I am flat tack digesting it all. A little New Zealand lingo there. As at times I need to re-listen or print off the trumpet brief to look up the scriptures to help me have the correct understanding based on our Father's perspective. All the messages regarding the youth camps and now the new students embarking on the next step in true education at God's College have been an absolute delight and joy to listen to. Most inspiring and exciting. Great detail as well. Another one here from Denver, Colorado. It says, thank you for stating that the jihadist group using a van running over people on a pedestrian mall murdered 13 people. I'm tired of the euphemisms of such words as killed 13 people or 13 people died. No, all of this is murder, and we need to begin to use that word more. Not that it will stop anything, however. Words, though, have power, and we should call this violence what it is. Thank you for... once again, for your work with the trumpet briefs. We need them, and I hope that you will keep them coming. So we'll save some of the other emails for a future program, perhaps. That's about all that we have time for, though, today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program and perhaps have your email read on the air, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.